hearing is ordinance number 2402, accessory dwelling units. Now, before we get started, I do want to, these ordinance is a little bit different than an application, so we're going to, at the appropriate time, we're going to ask for anyone who wishes to speak. You don't have to say for, against, whatever, you just come up and speak. And I'm going to let you know that we're looking for presentations of about 10 minutes, okay? So we're going to run the timer for 10 minutes. And I would just encourage you, if you have a comprehensive proposal or statement or PowerPoint that has a lot of historical information, I would suggest that you skip through that fairly quickly, okay? Because we're not really interested in what's in the rearview mirror as much as we're interested in what's in front of us. And most of us probably know or are familiar with that history anyway, but I understand why you want to put it on the record, and it is on the record if it's part of your written statement or part of your PowerPoint. So with those words of wisdom being said, Mr. Whitehouse and you, Mr. Robertson.
You need his number?
I've got his number.
And for the record, it's 3315. And I'm not on this side of
things. Yeah, I bet you repeat that in your sleep waiting for me to ask you. And we are watching the clock, so go ahead.
Well, I'll introduce the ordinance first, Mr. Chairman, and then we have a short presentation, and then we're happy to take any questions. Both of the short titles of these ordinances will test our Roman numerals. So the first is Ordinance Number 2402, which is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 110, Article 3, Sections 110-9, and Chapter 115, Articles 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 26, and Sections 115-4, 115-20, 115-23, 115-29, 115-32, 115-40, 115-48, 115-53, 56, 64, and 115-210 regarding accessory dwelling units. And submitted into the record for this ordinance, Mr. Chairman, we have one copy of the ordinance as it was introduced to County Council, and we have received one letter of support. And with that being said, we have a short presentation and just a few slides. And just to provide a summary, this is the same, more or less the same presentation that Mr. Robertson and I gave to County Council back in January of this year. And we wanted to start by just summarizing the accessory dwelling units, and there's a variety of types of accessory dwelling units. And the image on the right is actually a very good indication and illustration of the different types. So they can be detached, and that's the most common type that we see here in Sussex County, but they can also be attached. They can be attached above a garage, for example, or they can be attached an interior within a basement, or they could be in an attic. So ADUs encompasses a variety of types of dwelling units, and they're not necessarily detached. And when we summarize this to County Council, we explain that we already have accessory dwelling units in the code at the moment, and they've been in code since 1998, but they're referred to as garage studio apartments. And there are certain limitations and rules that led to the creation of this ordinance. For example, at the moment, they have to be detached. They have to be an accessory to a dwelling. They must be 800 square feet in area, which is quite limiting and has led to some variance requests on some applications. They have to have at least one parking space, and they don't necessarily have to be a garage or a studio. They just have to be detached. And then in 2019, Council created a notification process that allowed applicants to apply to the county for a garage studio apartment and for staff to review them and to notify neighbours. And if an objection is received, they proceed to the Board of Adjustment as a special use exception. But in cases where there's no objection and we don't receive anything back within 10 days or we receive letters of support, applicants just pay a $50 fee, and then staff are capable of approving them administratively, and it avoids the need to go to a public hearing before the Board of Adjustment. And we gave some numbers to Council about how many of these we've seen since 2019. So we see a few of them every single year, and you can see there's over 70 that have been received since 2019. We don't currently have the 2024 numbers, but most of these are approved. Over 85% are approved without a hearing, and the fee is just $50 to process. So we see some of them across in county every single year. We want to talk about what Kent County have done, and they adopted an ordinance in September of last year. And what that Kent County did was that they had a very good definition of what an ADU is. And I'll read it just for the record. That it's a self-contained dwelling unit that is secondary to the principal dwelling unit on the property and includes independent living facilities such as a separate entrance, bathroom and kitchen. The dwelling unit may be attached to the principal dwelling, which is accessory apartment, or detached on the same lot. And they have a set of rules about how many you can have on a parcel. For example, they say that only one is permitted per property, and it may be attached to the dwelling, that manufactured homes are not permitted as ADUs, that they have to be, in terms of their size, they have to be a maximum of 50% of the floor area of the principal dwelling. They have to be constructed on a slab or a crawl space, and Kent County has a total lot coverage maximum requirement of 50%, so that's 50% of the lot. And they also have to comply with all applicable codes and regulations, such as building code. And so that's adopted, and that's in effect in Kent County. And that led us to think about, in our presentation to County Council and in terms of how this ordinance has been drafted, we've adopted a similar style. So what the ordinance before you in your paper packet does, it changes the references from garage, studio, apartments in code to refer to accessory dwelling units. And the purpose of that is to promote consistency with statewide and national practice. We also increases. So right now we have an 800 square foot floor area limitation. We're proposing that be increased to 1,000 square feet. And similar to Kent County, we're proposing that the ADUs be no larger than 50% of the floor area of the single family dwelling on the lot, and that they shall be no more than 50% of the lot coverage. We're going to require that the ADU has at least one parking space. So that's in addition to any parking spaces that may also exist on the lot. And what is new as part of this ordinance is that we're proposing an administrative approval process that essentially means that you can apply for these, you pay the fee, and they're reviewed administratively by staff for checking things like setbacks and to make sure that heights and parking spaces are provided, but not to take those through the Board of Adjustment as special use exceptions. And then what this also does as well is that we're removing the detached requirement to allow basement ADUs, attached ADUs. That's something a lot of folks have come to us is that they want ADUs, they don't necessarily want them to be detached. So
just to add to that, there was a county council initiative, came out of, like I said, Kent County, but also the larger conversation about, you know, different types of housing and affordable housing, because this is certainly another type of affordable housing that's available. At the same time, recognized what would be appropriate sort of guardrails to include. And one of the things was the floor area size and the lot coverage size. That was so that we didn't effectively get duplexes, you know, we wanted to make sure this remained accessory to the primary dwelling. That's the intention of it. The other thing that we wanted to include was one parking space. We felt that was important, you know, particularly in some of our developments, you know, off-street parking's at a premium. We wanted to make sure that there was parking on-site available for this. And we also had a minimum lot size, recognizing that, you know, in smaller lot subdivision, like a cluster subdivision where there's 7,500 square foot lots, for example, the building footprint is not really that big to put on another ADU or to add an ADU into a basement of an existing house with, you know, additional traffic and things like that. So that's why there's that minimum lot size. The other thing that I do want to point out is that this is within Sussex County zoning code. This doesn't have any bearing on a homeowners association's decision through their restrictive covenants to regulate how they want homes to be located or whether they want ADUs within their development. So, you know, this just sets up the pathway for Sussex County to approve those. There would still be that private sort of contractual oversight over it. Timing-wise, too, I know there's a bill floating around the General Assembly on this that you may have heard about. I'm not sure where exactly it stands in terms of, you know, really getting any traction or not. You know, ours was kind of, we had talked with council about ours and began drafting it prior to that. That one's a little, it's different in that it doesn't have any parking requirements. Basically, there's just not any oversight at all. And it also says that you can't prohibit them and you can't prohibit them through restrictive covenants, you know. So I just sort of point that out. Ours is different from theirs, but we hope that it will, you know, significantly increase the housing stock through ADUs in Sussex County. So. Okay, I think that covers it.
All right.
Question?
Any questions?
Yeah.
Questions?
Yeah. I did.
The 50% lot coverage, does that apply just to the ADU, or is that the ADU and the residents combined?
The dwelling presumably would go first, and then the 50% would be 50% of the dwelling. But in all cases, it's 50% of the total area of the lot. So that's a good question. So if the dwelling occupies some of that, does it then have a net reduction? I would say no. In the, it's easy to calculate based on the total area of the lot. So.
Okay, thank you.
I have a couple questions. I think it's a great idea because we clearly need it. But so the maximum on the Newcastle County was 50%. Is there a minimum for the size of the building, the accessory building could be?
So there would be in building code. So you still have to meet building code, which includes the minimum size of the
unit. So it would follow that.
So it depends on how many rooms and how many bedrooms, for example. So it, theoretically, there is a minimum, but because building code can change over time, this ordinance doesn't specify a minimum. But there is the lot area requirements. So effectively, you'd have to design them to be a certain size.
Within, okay. Yeah. And the other question I had was regarding the manufactured, like, so we see the tiny homes, which I think is a great application for people to try to have a place to rent. That would be considered a manufactured home, though, is that correct?
So we have other provisions in code today for manufactured homes for an emergency hardship purpose and to site a manufactured home on a parcel. So it was envisaged that this would primarily be for stick-built custom designs. Now, if it's an internal ADU, it's not going to be a manufactured home, so you're thinking about detached. I don't think there's language in the ordinance that specifically prevents that, but this was designed for stick-built custom.
I'd really like to be able to see that as an option for people to be able to put, like, the tiny home as a detached dwelling.
But to respond to that, well, there is provision today. For if someone has a medical hardship or an emergency situation and needs to put a manufactured home in their backyard.
But even having to go through that, like, if...
Yeah, we looked at that because that was one of the things we wanted to make sure that the tiny homes were covered by that 1,000-foot max, you know, that we didn't have a number that...
Wasn't accommodating.
Yeah, it wasn't accommodating for that. I think the issue is really, you know, this isn't designed for RVs to become accessory dwellings on the one hand, but there's no reason why a tiny home couldn't be modified to become, I don't think, to be.
Yeah, we'll I wasn't meaning anything with wheels on it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just like the smaller units that I've seen.
That would be covered by this.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's all I have for right now. Thank you.
I have a question. Yeah. Go ahead, Scott, sorry.
Yeah, so those would typically show up with wheels attached and then they would be removed when it would be installed.
Right, all through building code. We didn't want to try to get into building code issues in the zoning.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
But, you know, that's a fair question. And it was something that we took into account.
So my question would be for line 29, section A, which talks about sewer requirements. So if I'm understanding this correctly, older sewers would not qualify for this.
Yeah, so we included that part about section 110-9 just to make sure that ADUs were included potentially in the EDUs for the lot. But you're right, they're still going to have to either comply with county engineering because they're going to need a permit from them or DENREC on the septic, you know. So, yeah.
What I'm saying is, so I run across some sewers that are over designed. Somebody who's going to build a 5,000 square foot five bedroom house and building a 2,000 square foot house with two bedrooms. If they can bring documentation saying that this sewer is designed for this amount of rooms, would they be able to use that?
Yeah.
Correct. So as part of our review process, whether it's at the time of applying for your ADU or applying for a building permit, that's all going to be checked. So we're not going to allow extra a building permit if there's no provision for sewer or there's no provision for septic.
So they can bring that documentation to you. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
That's my question. That was it.
Anything else? All right, gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your ordinance. Okay, is anyone who would like to speak in regard to ordinance 24-02, accessory dwelling units? Anyone? I think Mr. Hutt might have a few well-chosen words to share with us. Come on up.
There's no street name involved. How can he?
I know. Well,
I was going to say that I don't have any good history here. I don't have any good street names. It's going to be rather dull, unfortunately. And if I may, I'm going to hand...
White House, Mr. Robinson.
Okay. For the record, David Hutt with the law firm of Morris James. Here in Georgetown. What is being handed down to you are three comments on the draft ordinance. And I want to start by saying that I I'll echo the comments that have been made by the commission members, that I think that the ordinance is certainly something that's needed and something that will be very helpful. And my comments are certainly directed to try to help make that as helpful and as useful as possible for everyone involved. I did not mimic the exact style of changes, because in the draft ordinance, there's all sorts of italicized things and underlined things. I took all of that, and if I changed something, there's a strike through or a double underline if it's being added. The first item that you can see there is lines 105 to 106, and it goes to Mr. Mears' exact question that he asked. And you'll see that I propose that lines 105 and 106 be deleted. With the information I just heard from Mr. Whitehouse and Mr. Robertson, I would change that to say so that it would not be deleted. The first three words would be deleted, and in that last sentence would read, a lot with an accessory dwelling unit shall not have a lot coverage that is greater than 50%. As it's presently written, I think it says that the accessory dwelling unit cannot have a lot coverage that is greater than 50%. And I don't think that's what was intentioned. It can only be half as big as the floor area of the main dwelling. And again, I was sort of on the same page, I believe, as Commissioner Mears was with respect to that question or concern. So again, what I've written here is not correct, but what I just said, I think, would help clarify that in the future code provision if it's adopted by council. The next section is sections 116, or I'm sorry, rather lines 116 through 119. And I will tell you that I read that provision forwards and backwards and sideways and struggled to understand it. And so I took a stab at trying to make it more understandable, at least my understanding of what was intended there. And the struggle that I had in trying to decipher what it meant was I understood the purpose of it. I think the purpose of it is so that if you have a detached accessory dwelling unit, it has to be behind the main dwelling, and it was trying to impact the setbacks to say that you can't have it essentially, you know, significantly outside the setbacks of the main dwelling. It sort of needs to stay in, visually needs to stay in line with the main dwelling. I don't think that's necessarily what it said as it was written, and that may be Kent County's fault. I won't blame Mr. Robertson or Mr. Whitehouse. But what I did, as you can see, based on the double underlining and the strike-throughs that are there, I separated into two concepts. One is the attached, because obviously the attached is going to be part of the single-family dwelling, and it just has to comply with the setback requirements in the zoning code. And then identified separately that a detached accessory dwelling unit has to be behind the primary single-family dwelling, and its setbacks have to be the largest setback achievable between the minimum setback required in the zoning code for the primary single-family dwelling and then one-half of the single-family dwelling's actual side and rear setbacks. And that may, in fact, be no clearer than it was before, but it was it was my attempt to clarify that provision. So
I can explain it, too. At least the intent of it is if you have a lot with a side boundary and there's a 10-foot setback established by code and your house, say, is 20 feet actually built off the property line. So that like the house is set back 20 feet even though it's a 10-foot setback. The idea would be that you could build the accessory structure to 15 feet, you know, so that it's not sticking out completely behind the house. And that was, I don't know if that even matters. I mean, I don't know if we even care, you know, but that came from Kent County so that, you know, visually, if you're looking at the front of the house, you know, the bulk of what you're looking at is the house in front and not, you know. So the flip side of it is, I don't know how well that works on a really large, if you had like a 5-acre parcel, you know, that might make for some odd math as I'm sitting here thinking about it as well. Yeah. You know, we were thinking, when we were drafting, I think we were considering more subdivision lots than, you know, larger tracts, so it may be something to consider removing if appropriate altogether.
I would have no objection to its removal. I was simply trying to clarify the language that was there. But Mr. Robertson, having pointed out the large scale lot, and I'm trying to visualize that now, and if you had to be a minimum of one half of that setback, that could be awkward. Or look awkward.
That's an easy fix if you decide to do it either way, so, yeah.
So those first two items that you see on the printouts that I gave you are text changes, and certainly the last one that I'm going to talk about here is a text change as well. But I will tell you that in addition to being a text change, what I'm going to be saying is a lot of policy involved as well. What I've proposed is the deletion of the minimum lot size of 1/2 acre in size from the requirements that are found in this proposed ordinance. And the reason for that is set forth, in my mind, in the very purpose of the ordinance as it's in the recitals. It talks about the need for affordable housing options in Sussex County and a diversification of housing options being available. And the number of lots that exist, particularly in eastern Sussex County, that are going to be 1/2 acre in size or greater is very few. In the past 10 years, I believe I've presented one standard subdivision to this county, which is the size subdivision you would need in order for this ordinance to have an impact and take effect. And what concerns me, and again, I want to start by saying this ordinance is very well intentioned, and I think it's headed in the right direction. What concerns me is these are the eastern side of Sussex County is where affordable housing is probably most desperately needed by individuals, and a huge section of that this will never apply to. And in my mind, the protection for these cluster subdivisions is the restrictive covenants that Mr. Robertson mentioned when he gave his introductory comments to this. The counties, you know, every person who lives in a subdivision or community that has restrictive covenants is subject to Sussex County zoning code, and of course the private contractual requirements within whatever restrictive covenants exist for that. And sometimes the two agree, but it's always the most restrictive of the two that applies. So if you live in community X and community X does not allow for an accessory dwelling unit or something like that, then you couldn't do it irrespective of whether you had 1/2 acre, 3/4 acre, a full acre, or a 7,500 square foot lot. And so my concern is that presently, if you lived in one of those communities, you could file for that. You could file a special use exception request with Mr. Whitehouse's office, and you could go through the process, whether it's the administrative process or the public hearing process, and you could actually achieve that. And again, you're still having to comply with restrictive covenants. With this ordinance, that's not even an option. There are no special use exceptions available. It's simply a permitted use. And again, it's sort of the inverse. The goal of this was so that a person wouldn't have to do either the administrative process or the public hearing process. And I think it may have an inverse effect of eliminating a large portion of the county from this being able to be applied or used. And again, as I stated, that's very much a policy argument, but it's something that when I looked at this, it concerned me that this will not be as helpful as it's intended to be to the greatest number of people that are out there. And again, that's why I considered striking it. I would note that even 1/2 acre, I'm not sure that number makes sense. Within the AR section, which is the section where these requirements are, if you have a septic system, the lots are 20,000 square feet, which is, you could have a standard subdivision of 20,000 square foot lots. The county doesn't see them often. but
that occurred to me as well, Mr. Hutt, that the 1/2 acre, you might want to say 20,000 instead of, because technically 20,000 is less than 1/2 acre. At least want to say 20,000, maybe you'd even want to say 10. On a practical matter, on a 7,500 square foot lot, I'm not sure how you'd ever get it done. You know,
I think in an attached structure is how you would get that done.
You're just going to take the garage and use it as an accessory dwelling unit. That would probably be your only option on a 7,500 square foot. But I hear what you're saying. You would like people to have that option. Okay.
And again, I think the ordinance as it's written eliminates that as an option because there's no more. Even if you wanted, and maybe, there was a number of things I thought of. Maybe there's still a special use exception request route available. It's a permitted use for certain size lots and a special use exception for smaller lots.
That occurred to me as well. Yeah. So let anything smaller than 20,000 has to go through a process.
Now that I've said that and you've agreed with me.
It's time for you to sit down.
I was going to point.
Don't push it.
I was going to. No, I should. I was going to point out that this is also available in MR and GR, and the minimum size lot there is 10,000 square feet.
No.
And so that's where, again, that's why I don't. I'm not saying I have the answer. It's just a concern because I think this is needed, and I feel like there's a whole slice of Sussex County that gets really bypassed, overlooked, whatever you want to say with this ordinance.
Yeah. You're
right. I have observed in looking at real estate when I bought my house, you know, there's lots of 0.49 acre lots out there for sale that are not in communities, that this would, you know, exclude them from being able to do this. So thank you.
All right, sir.
Those are all my comments.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in this particular ordinance? Okay, come on up. Tell us who you are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. My name is Matt Lloyd. I live at 32228 Old Hickory Road in Laurel. First, I just want to thank you for your service and dedication to Sussex County. I recognize it's often a thankless job, but also a very necessary job for the betterment of the county. I also want to say I'm happy to see the ADU ordinance has been introduced. Big thanks to County Council for putting this forward. I believe this has been a long time coming, and I think these ADUs will go a long way in helping solve the affordable housing crisis that exists here in Sussex County. I plan to be brief, under 5 minutes. In 2019, an independent council study determined we were 10,000 households short, and now 5 years later, we can imagine it is likely doubled, if not tripled in size, of the supply-demand problem. These ADUs are a great way to increase the housing supply while minimizing consumption of natural resources, as well as expanding the rights of the citizens who live here. By allowing homeowners to occupy this additional unit, be it for family members, caretakers, or to increase their household income by renting it out. All this can be done at a fraction of the cost of what it would be to build onto a new property. Earlier this year, I came out on the radio and newspaper championing the need for these things. I have personal experience building these and using them at properties that I own out of state. They work, they are great options for affordable housing, and they can tap into existing infrastructure on the property, making them ideal, cost-effective housing options. Reading through the first rendition of the ordinance change, I noticed a couple items for your consideration. I've taken the time to change the verbiage using the great work that's already been done by the commission staff. I will work quickly through those, explaining the reasoning behind some of these changes, and then provide each of you with a copy of my proposed verbiage. First, and I know this has been touched on, regarding the separate septic requirement, lines 29 through 33 stipulate that an independent sewer is required for newly constructed dwellings. However, in accordance with DENREC, because septic capacity is determined by bedroom count, if the proposed ADU, along with a primary dwelling bedroom count, does not exceed the current septic capacity, then the owner should automatically have the right to utilize the existing septic system, provided that it's able to be proved the size of the septic and up to snuff with DENREC. But if the overall bedrooms exceed the current capacity, it should say that a new system may be required, or the homeowner has the option to upgrade the existing septic. This is critical because of limited parcel size, soil suitability, as well as cost of installing a separate system. These options should be the right of the homeowner based on their existing septic capacity, not necessarily determined by the county engineer. It's a slight change, but I believe it's necessary to be specific in the language. You should note, when I wrote my recommendations, I kept them as simple and as close to the original verbiage as I could. Secondly, regarding the type of ADUs, lines 66 through 71 point out that the ADUs may be attached or detached from the primary dwelling. Again, I know it's been touched on, but across the country, there's a third type recognized, referred to as an interior ADUs. These would be finished basements with separate entrances and egress considerations in conformity with International Building Code. It could be interpreted that attached ADUs may include finished basements, but as a matter of being consistent with standard practices and verbiage, I think it's necessary to include attached, detached, and interior types to avoid confusion or misinterpretation of the ordinance. Third, lines 89 through 92 discuss the fee. And let me just say, as a conservative Republican who owns his property and pays his taxes, I don't think there should be a cost for doing what I interpret as my right anyway, but for the sake of standard practices and paying for the county services, I'd request we change the fee to not exceed $50. This is to provide consistency and fix in a fixed cost figure for homeowners to count on for years to come. Fourth, lines 94 through 97 require a signed, sealed survey by a licensed surveyor. However, in the case of an existing dwelling, a survey would already be on file. We know where the existing structure is, and so for simplicity and cost's sake, I think we should eliminate this requirement and simply ask for an accurate drawing. Depicted on paper such as graph paper with scale and dimensions showing the location and footprint of the dwellings. I'd like to remind you that the whole purpose of this ADU ordinance is to encourage the building of housing and the supply thereof. But each requirement that we place that adds to the cost of the project just increases the barrier of entry and limits people from starting on a project like this anyway. Fifth, lines 103 through 106 discuss the maximum footprint. I think it's worth noting that a significant portion of ADUs will be converted from existing structures such as garages and pole barns. In these cases, to limit the size of the conversion will unnecessarily restrict what would otherwise be already a 50% solution and would eliminate a significant number of ADUs from becoming available by owners who've already invested a handsome sum into their secondary dwelling. In these cases, I believe it's appropriate to consider foregoing the size limit. Lastly, lines 116 through 119 stipulate that an ADU be placed behind the primary dwelling. However, a considerable amount of dwellings that will be converted currently sit adjacent to the primary dwelling. So I think it's necessary to say that ADUs can be built behind or adjacent to the existing dwelling in cases where only space is available in front of the house. I believe it should be allowed by the county, but by the engineer in the best interest of the county. I personally know of parcels where the house sits at the rear of the parcel, but the only space available sits in front of the house, concealed by trees between the main dwelling and the road. I got here a little late. You guys cruised through the agenda today, but this concludes my recommended ordinance changes, and I'm happy to take any questions regarding this.
Do you have that? You said, do you have it written down?
I do, yes. Notes, I'll hand it to you. Yep. And again, I made it as simple as possible. I had eight copies.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
That's it. So I appreciate the time. I look forward to the implementation of the ADU ordinance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
A couple comments on that, too. Just clarification points. One, that we, as I mentioned, we plugged in section 110-9. That has to do with county sewer systems, as Mr. Whitehouse explained, you know, whether or not, and I think Mr. Butler asked, you know, whether or not the septic system is sufficient to serve an ADU, that's going to be a DENREC issue. That this was in here to make sure that we didn't hang up somebody, because the way the old code was worded, theoretically, you would have needed a separate sewer connection for the ADU, We wanted to make sure that it could all be part of a single sewer connection. So that was actually sort of streamlining things. But I realize, you know, as this gentleman mentioned, and as you all are hearing that, you sort of see that out of context in the ordinance. With the fees, that was actually a decision not to make it so that, you know, there's some ad hoc determination of county council, but a while back, and you all wouldn't have necessarily seen this, like several years ago at this point, county council wanted to pull all the fees out of, the mention of fees out of all the different chapters of the code and put them in a single chapter in the code. That way it could all be handled really at the time of budgeting versus having to amend the zoning code, you know, if the fees change or whatever. So that's still handled each year on a public hearing basis when the budget gets approved. So that was not to change the fee amount, just that was sort of a cleanup thing that we were doing at the same time we did this. So, but yeah, some of the other comments were good ones, like referencing interior in addition to attached and detached, so yeah.
I appreciate the gentleman's comment that the square footage or 50% coverage rule could restrict the use of existing garages or over garages. That's big.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to consider, yeah.
Yeah.
It all is kind of, there's a bunch of moving parts to it, you know, because the other thing is, you know, what the commission, the staff's going to look at is, you know, we say you can convert a garage, but you still need the off-street parking, you know,
right.
So you've got to make sure if a garage gets converted that there's still
have to park
two spaces right. plus one for the ADU, you know, so, but I hear what you're saying on the coverage.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a detached garage with space over it that could be converted.
Right.
And you could limit the space to 1,000 or less, but the existing house and garage could already be more than 50%.
No,
so it's a valid suggestion.
Yeah.
We see that often too with pole barns. So that's something that we really need to, not to go down a rabbit hole, but.
Right.
Because I know all too well, right now, there's a situation, their plans are being drawn for their home, they have a pole barn on their property, but then it.
And maybe it's such a thing where, you know, it's, you know, as we're having this sort of Vimer discussion about it, that, you know, can't count, it may be that if we have the 1,000-square-foot minimum, that lot coverage doesn't really matter at all, you know? I mean, again, as we mentioned before, the main thing was, is that we don't, you know, again, all the moving parts, we want to make sure that also a subdivision, if it's 100 acres and there's 200 houses on it at 2 units an acre, doesn't balloon into a 400-unit subdivision, you know, basically double its density.
Right.
I mean, that's the other aspect, because, you know, that throws off all your del dot calculations,
count,
all
yeah.
your traffic counts,
yeah.
all your sewer capacity and everything else, you know?
Yeah.
So, again, it's when you start, as you said, start peeling back the layers, you know, it, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different stuff that went into the consideration for this.
I understand what you guys are saying, but what I hear is a lot of east side, east side, east side. How about the west side? We have a lot of room. And we have quite a bit of room. There's a lot of 50-acre, 100-acre, 200, 300-acre tracts of land over there that we can use. Prime example, I got an office above my pole barn. Probably in violation. I don't know. Don't care. I'm going to use it.
Remember the records.
I don't care. It is what it is.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak?
When the constable shows up tomorrow, you know why.
Being none,
I'm just kidding.
We'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to